Come in, Agents Jackie. Agents Mike.
Oh, well, I guess... I don't know why I'm referring to Mike as an agent.
Well?
He's such a good agent, he's plural.
Agents Clerk. Mike and Mike Jackie. Yeah.
The name's Clerk. Video store.
My name is Bond. James Bond. My instructions were implicit. I was to leave for Jamaica in 2 hours. License to kill.
Now you maybe miss it.
You don't miss a thing.
I decided to accept your invitation.
I have to leave immediately.
Just as things were getting interesting again.
James Bond, 007. Licensed to kill whom he pleases, where he pleases, when he pleases. From the elegant clubrooms of Mayfair to exotic island night spots.
Jump up, jump up.
Good evening. Who pays you?
You.
Tell us.
A strange adventure of intrigue, treachery, and love.
Oh, Mr. Bond, I was thinking, why don't you collect me at my apartment? It's lovely up here in the mountains.
Her directions were easy to follow, and she sent a few of her friends to make sure I didn't get lost. She thought I was dead, but I proceeded to prove her wrong. I thought it was always polite to knock first. Before shooting. Honey, from our very first meeting, was everything her name implied. She clung to me like a wet bathing suit. But business as usual came first. The pace was killing.
I thought you less stupid. I could have had you killed in the swamp.
And why didn't you?
You damaged my organization. Unfortunately, I misjudged you. You are just a stupid policeman whose luck is run out.
Maybe it was my luck. Up to my neck in hot water. Or something blowing up in my face.
You'll live dangerously with a superbly resourceful James Bond. The explosive screen dramatization of the book that has entertained millions of readers. The exotic and tantalizing Dr. No.
Some people will go to any extremes for a little privacy.
Welcome to the, I was about to say the first Bondcast, but technically I guess this is the second. We started at the end with No Time to Die, now we're right back at the beginning with 1962's Dr. No. Now, I am the M figure in this relationship, you two are the agents. However, as the agents, I'm going to let you guys lead these episodes going forward. I'm going to let you do the talking. You guys,
I need to get one thing out of the way, is... Moneypenny the precursor to M?
Moneypenny is the secretary.
Moneypenny?
What are you talking about?
Yeah, what are you asking?
Wait a minute. Are you asking, like does Moneypenny become Judy Dench's character?
Yes.
Like, later?
I was wondering that this whole time.
I don't know.
Because I just need to figure out if you're also a Moneypenny.
Let's just establish that yes, Dave was originally a Moneypenny figure.
Then I became a manager at the store. Well, a shift leader at the store. Became manager eventually.
I don't know the backstory for Judi Dench M. I feel like they just were like, and here's the new Bond movie, and guess what? Here's M.
Well, I can't help but notice there's no Moneypenny in those new Bond movies, but there is an
not
M.
until Skyfall.
Well, if you're talking about the Daniel Craigs, but when Judi Dench first became M, there was a Moneypenny. So your logic is flawed, Mike.
Yeah, fuck
Unless
off.
Unless you prescribe to the theory similar to the Bond theory that there is Moneypenny is a classification.
It's a title, yeah.
So there
well,
have been
this
many
is off
Moneypenny.
To a great start.
We're already getting into that dumbass Bond theory. Okay, now that we got it out there, let's just kill
be
it right
silly.
Now.
Doctor but, No.
But I am your M, your Moneypenny, Dave.
I feel like you're about to say Moneypenny.
Moneypenny. I am joined by agents of the store, Jackie.
I'm trying to think of a clever thing, but I couldn't because I watched this in two installments. Hi.
And Agent Mike.
Underneath the mango tree.
Damn it. Could have pulled the mango tree.
So please, agents, let's talk about your first assignment, 1962's Dr. No.
Well, this was my... I thought I'd seen this movie before, but this was my first time seeing it. How about you, Agent Jackie?
It was my second time seeing it. I'd watched it once before in like college, and I remembered
it
being
in the pre-wasteland,
very, very pre-wasteland. Yes, many, many, many moons ago. But I remembered it being like boring, which looking back is a pretty, like college age opinion.
Didn't you say like there was some guy who was like, "Let's watch Dr. No," and you were like, "It's boring," and you were like. She was
Oh, yeah.
I guess, like, you have to get used to old movies.
Well, yeah, there's some, shitty, shitty kind of thing of, like, well, back then, it's not a modern movie, okay? But I was like, fuck off.
It's funny you mentioned the concept of, quote-unquote, old movies, because that's something I'd like to come back to later when we talk about the music for this movie.
Oh, sure.
How it rules?
But, because it fucking rules.
One of the songs does.
Sure. But I remember.
Listen, I
looked
underneath the mango tree, but I draw the line at Three Blind Mice.
I remembered it, watching it at the time and not finding it very interesting. But watching it this time, I was like, this does rule in a lot of ways. And it is a lot more interesting than I previously thought of it.
Yeah, not to skip to the end, but I enjoyed this. Like, I don't think this is like, peak cinema or anything.
No, but it's
it was
fun.
A fun movie, and I liked it a lot more than I thought I would. And I thought it was the big thing that I think, well, one of the things that I wasn't expecting, but I did like, and I'm just such a sucker for in any movie, is
the mango tree.
It was clearly shot on location.
Oh, yeah.
It was
shot on location in like the Bahamas or
oh yeah, it was just gorgeous. Like,
yeah, and it was like clearly shot there.
Everyone's sweating. There's like dust. It looked real.
And one
James
of the
Bond wears like a blue polo shirt throughout the third act of this movie,
and he looks so hot in it. But
there's a lot of wet clothes in this movie.
Sure are. every time there'd just be, some scene of him talking to like a fisherman or whatever, and it's just like, man, look at that water. Oh,
yeah, I love
looks so gorgeous.
One of my favorite things about movies is like the visual tourism kind of aspect. And it's cool. Like, that's another cool thing about older movies, of times when I wasn't alive. Because not only am I getting to see, like, the Bahamas, but the Bahamas in, like, the 60s. I mean, at least a very stylized version, but it felt like a real place. And it was, I just, like, loved, seeing the bars and, like, the, it did a really good job, I think, of making you feel like you're there. And then half the movie is like,
is a silly
Pinewood
set.
Studios,
yeah.
Where it's like, I can feel the prefab walls falling apart at the seams.
This is supposed to be, the millionaire's secret lair. And like,
it looks like he did spend $1 million.
$1 million in 21st century money, which is, I think, negative $5.
Yeah, after taxes, I think he like owes money on that base. Yeah.
Oh, man, I mean, it's a set, but, like, I think it's a very well, his, if we're talking about Dr. No's lair, like, I,
no,
I love
did really
the look
like
of
the,
it.
I did really
it
like
does
the
look
lair.
Good. When, actually, now, thinking about the prefab stuff was more
the science-y,
the British office.
Oh, that too.
The offices of the British spies, that, where it's just
they
have one cubicle, or not a cubicle, like one filing cabinet a desk.
They're like, I don't know, put up some wood paneling. I don't know.
There's some of that, but yeah, there was a couple offices that were. I mean, I didn't. To be clear,
I'm
I wasn't
mad
like
at this.
This sucks. Yeah. Like it was.
I mean,
charming,
this is you know from me coming from someone who loves Star Trek TOS. Like I love a fucking prefab set.
It was definitely some TOS. I mean, higher budget than that, but it was
sure. But I did, speaking of TOS, when they are in the lair and their first, you know, like, here are your rooms and you're totally legit lair and we're not going to drug your coffee at all. The quote unquote automatic doors there, because it is the 60s and automatic doors did not exist yet. As in TOS, someone had to be moving those off screen. And I love that shit.
and this is like, so this is the first Bond movie I've read, according to the Chattopedia.
Read?
And this is something, M, if I may ask for a mission briefing, what was the state of Bond at the time this movie came out? Like, it was a series of books. Was it still coming out, or like, was it popular that, like?
Oh, yeah, very, very popular. It was, they were all best-selling books. Dr. No, if I'm not mistaken, I think was the sixth novel. Casino Royale was the first, and
oddly enough, Moonraker was the first.
No, I think Moonraker was the second or third. Actually,
no way, really.
But
I love
the story of the novel is very different from the story of the movie, which we'll talk about in a much later episode.
Interesting. Okay, well, I hope
it had to deal with rockets. I think
that makes sense.
They didn't go to space and have a space laser battle.
But did Jaws show up? Is he a book character or no?
I think there was a character named Jaws, I think, but I never got to that novel. Like, to be honest, I fell off on the Bond novels at Thunderball. There's a little bit of Tolkien-esque writing in there where he kind of gets into the minutiae of, like, the, at least for me, I thought at the time, the technical aspects of, like, planes and stuff.
The stump of the tree was a brown hue. They
stopped for their 15th breakfast, you know, that kind of thing. That's where
Bond
I
made
off.
Another
I'm
cocktail.
Looking at the cover of the Book of Thunderball, and I would urge everyone out in the waste to look that up, because the book might not be good, but this is one of the most badass covers. It is.
I never
finished
the book, so I can't say. But
just the cover of the book is a. It's like the knife, you know, the knife game where you're like doing the, like an alien, like between the fingers. Mm-hmm. It looks like clearly someone had played that. There's a knife stuck in between fingers.
Onto some cards, some playing cards.
The finger is a skeleton hand.
Oh,
and it's on top of playing cards.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Anyway, so this was a popular series of books and was
still
this
coming out at the time, I think. There were some new books coming out.
So 62. This was like, hey, let's try and capitalize on the success. And was that originally planned to be like a series of movies, or was this like, let's see how this does, and if it does well, we'll make more?
I might be getting my details a little mixed up, but yeah, I think it was planned to be a series. There was a TV adaptation of Casino Royale where James Bond was American and called Jimmy Bond.
Oh.
Well, it looks like you're as lucky as they say. Hey? Oh, you're a legend, old boy. Card Sense Jimmy Bond, they call you. I knew you right away.
I didn't know I had that much of a reputation.
Oh, my dear fellow. Look here. How about you give me the lowdown? How to play. Over a drink? Oh, I'm very sorry. My name's Clarence Leiter.
Well, sure. What have I got to lose?
Do you ever lose, old boy? Buzz over there. Lead on.
That did not do
Jimmy
well.
Bond.
Okay.
And I think, if I'm not mistaken, originally the producers of this movie and the series as a whole originally intended for Thunderball to be the first one, because Thunderball was kind of like, the story of that is like very big scale thing, like a nuclear bomb is hijacked and, you know, Britain's held for ransom. It's a very big story. They wanted that, but they couldn't get the rights.
And do the underwater fight, I'm guessing.
Yeah, but honestly, like, Dr. No, which I did read, is, I think, a good point to start the series on from a perspective. Because, again, they had a big budget for this movie. I think it was like $1 million, maybe slightly under, but which at the time wouldn't have been a colossal budget, but it would be like the equivalent of like a mid-sized budget, I think, nowadays. Yeah. Sure. But I think it's a good one to start out with because it's like the scale of it is I think, good for our first outing as for the character. And I think it's more of a detective story. Like, honestly, like watching it again now for this, like, I was struck by how simple it was compared to all the other Bond movies, even the second one.
Oh, yeah.
It's very small scale. It's kind of a straight up detective story. And it got me thinking, like, I never really, when I think of Bond, I don't think of him as a detective, even though I guess that's technically what he's doing in each movie. But this one felt more like a, how would I put it? Like a 40s or 50s cop tale almost. I don't know. It just.
No, I get that. It's him like, yeah, kind of quietly following some leads rather than
And interviewing people.
Yeah. I really liked, I had a note about this and everything, of the scene right before one of the few times we see him like shoot a dude. But it's when he's waiting for like the scientist to come into the secretary's house, and he's sitting there, he's setting up, like, he's sitting by the door, he's got his gun, setting up the silencer, and he's got a pack of playing cards, and it cuts to, like, presumably, like, a couple hours later, it's dark now, and he's just been playing solitaire, just, like,
times before smartphones.
Sitting there, you know, waiting, which, like, I really like that they included, like, something kind of boring like that. Of
like the passage of time, too.
That
like
must be a lot of spy work.
I feel it's like it's cool character boring. Building because he's just so calm and collected.
Yeah, and he looks cool doing it, obviously. But it's like it's one of those things that you can't really imagine in a more modern Bond of just, yeah, acknowledging that, like, probably most of spy work is boring shit like waiting around and not glamorous, you know, drinking and fucking and
although there's a lot of that.
There is a lot of that, which I love, obviously. But
I really like his low tech gadgets in this movie.
Yeah, he's got like one specific gun.
He gets his new gun.
And I love that the gun's like a thing. Like,
yeah.
That they like make a whole scene of like, Bond, you gotta get rid of this gun. Your gun sucks.
Sir, take off your jacket. Give me your gun. Yes, I thought so. This damn Beretta again. I've told you about this before. You tell him. For the last time.
It's nice and light. In a lady's handbag. No stopping power.
Any comment, 007?
I disagree, sir. I've used the Beretta for 10 years. I've never missed with a jet.
Yeah, maybe not. But it jammed on your last job, and you spent 6 months in hospital in consequence. If you carry a 00 number, it means you're licensed to kill, not get killed. And another thing. Since I've been head of MI7, there's been a 40% drop in 00 operative casualties, and I want it to stay that way. You'll carry the Walter. Unless, of course, you prefer to go back to standard intelligence duties.
No, sir. I would not.
Then from now on, you carry a different gun. Show him, Amra.
Walter PPK. 7.65 mil with a delivery like a brick through a plate glass window. Takes a Brausch silencer with very little reduction in muzzle velocity. The American CIA swear by them.
Thank you, Major Boothroyd.
Thank you, sir. Good night, sir.
There's an interesting piece, like there's a lot of backstory building being shown on screen in like the first 15-20 minutes of this movie with the character. Not only obviously the introduction, which we'll get to in a second, but something I want to touch on. You mentioned the gun. There is a very interesting piece of backstory given in this scene when he's talking to M and Q. You may not have noticed it, but that was Q who came in and gave him that gun. Major Boothroyd is his name. No fanfare. He won't show up as we know him until the second movie, but sure. He gives him his gun and Bond's like, oh, I don't know, man. I don't know why I'm saying it like that. Like,
yeah, my that's Beretta, a great Sean Connery.
Famous tweet with Sean Connery.
I don't know, man. Good, this guy's pretty good. But no, he says, like, I never missed with it. And then M goes, yeah, but it jammed up on you the last time and you spent 6 months in a hospital. And I'm like, whoa, that's like, can you imagine James Bond? Crazy stuff happens to him in future movies. But like, to me, that's a character building moment right there. Cause like, I feel like in the general zeitgeist, like Bond is like, I feel like that your average
person
would
probably untouchable.
Say, exactly, he's untouchable, but his gun jammed on him, which that alone's like, that wouldn't happen to James Bond.
Not my Bond.
My Bond's guns.
My Bond's a badass.
Goddamn libs, just trying to simp Bond.
But that I thought that was cool. Like, there was some things in this movie that make him touchable, I feel. And to me, I think it makes it more exciting and there's more tension. Not discounting, like, you know, fun, untouchable Bond that we'll get later, but I thought that it was just kind of like refreshing almost to a degree to see him do this and to see him not use like typical gadgets. Like, one of my favorite parts of this movie and one of my favorite Bond tropes of the earlier era is him setting up a room. Or invest, like, you know what I mean? Looking at a room, like, before he leaves, he's like, all right, I know I'm probably being watched. I'm going to take one of my hairs, like, lick it, put it on, like, the closet door. So if anyone opens it, I'll know because the hair will be gone. I'll put some powder on my briefcase to see if anyone's touched it. Like, those are, like the 50s, 60s era spy stuff that's, like, really interesting and cool.
Jackie, what did you say during that scene?
Okay, so I was going to bring this up. Was this y'all's first exposure to that kind of,
technique?
Hair thing of, like, or, you know, licking it, putting it across the door, or, like, putting it, like, closing a door with the hair, like, sticking out kind of thing?
I had seen this before in The Sting, only it was done with a piece of thin paper.
Yeah, something like that. Well, my first exposure to the trick with the hair was in the manga Death Note.
Oh, what's
so that moment where we were watching it and I said that out loud, and Michael called me, like, a weeaboo or something. But, yeah, real James Bond and or Light Yagami trick. Put a little hair or a piece of paper to see if people have been in your room.
It's clever, though.
It is. And it's so, you know, yeah, like, not low rent, but, like, you know, it's not a gadget. It's just a
little resourceful.
Technique. It's resourceful. It's a little trick. Yeah. So, yeah, hey, all you kids out in the wastes, if you want to see if anyone's been in your room, do a little hair trick. You want to see if anyone's come through your vents.
You'll have to send away for the powder, though.
Bring your own powder.
Bring your own powder.
But yeah, shall we start at the top?
I do want to note just one thing that I've seen on the Chattopedia regarding the budget. And in fact, that we were mentioning, or I was mentioning, some of the office sets were cheap. That is because the person who was in charge of, like, that part of the movie was Ken Adam, who also did Dr. Strangelove, which is kind of neat.
Oh, interesting.
He's a very prolific production designer.
He said, so the budget for the whole film was $1 million. My budget was £14,500.
Oh!
They were all filming in Jamaica, spending the money, and I was in Pinewood Studio.
Yep.
It wasn't a real aquarium. It was a disaster, to tell you the truth, because we had so little money. We had to use rear projection and get stock footage of fish.
Oh, God bless him.
We mixed. I didn't see any reason why Dr. No shouldn't have good taste, so we mixed contemporary furniture and antiques. I thought it would be fun for him to have some stolen art, so he used Goya's portrait of the Duke of Wellington, which was still missing at the time. That's cool.
That's cute.
That's a neat thing.
Yeah. And it's called out in the movie. There's like a musical sting, like,
oh yeah, and like Blonde does like a double take.
Yeah, he's like, burn.
That's good for him. In that case, I love it.
He actually painted that. He painted the replica painting.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Gotta do what you gotta do.
This guy, give this guy a raise.
The real
deal. He probably did get a raise after this.
Sure he did.
Oh, he definitely did. He'll become a big piece of the Bond movies going forward, especially around Thunderball and You Only Live Twice. That's crazy to think, because like they kind of turn that straw. What's that expression? Turn straw into something.
Turn the egg into a golden goose egg.
Yeah, sure.
He churned that cream into butter. I'll say that. Yeah. There we go. I know that he is sure a saying. Did. But he turned that fish tank into butter because, honestly, that's kind of a fun moment in the movie where it's there. Because they have to, yeah, since Ken Adams having to use rear projection to make this fish, this aquarium, they have to call on it in the movie. Right. Otherwise, it's like, hey, why do you have a 50-foot large fish there? What's going on? I like that they do that. They talk about like a magnifying effect with the glass and all that. And I that was kind of cool. I like that.
Yeah,
I had no idea it was because the production was so cheap with the sets and all that. That's the reason why.
That's funny though. Like the way he talks about it is like they blew it all in Jamaica.
I mean, and it makes sense. They're like, well, we need these beautiful shots of beautiful landscape and water and everything. And are you good if we give you like $10? Can you do something with that?
We built a tank that shoots fire. That was like a lot of the budget.
Can you do that?
Oh, the tank. That's right. The dragon.
let's start at the top here. We open on does it start with the title sequence?
It does because then it goes into Three Blind Mice, which then goes into
the title sequence is like right off the bat so great.
It is,
and I'll say this is my we'll see. You know, I'm obviously no expert, but so far, this is my favorite version of the Bond theme by far. Like, it sounds it sounds like the recording was, like, not that expensive. So, like, it has this, like, almost, like, garage rock kind of vibe to it with, like, the horns. It feels like a live performance.
I was
going to
say, or it just feels alive.
It feels powerful. Like, it's not perfect, which is perfect, you know?
There's something interesting too. Something struck me watching this. There's really something special about having the first, because as we know, it's a big thing. The main title for the title song for a Bond movie. It's a big deal. Like they've won Oscars in the past. Like they've had Adele and Billie Eilish do these things. Mm-hmm. Madonna in the worst one.
Duran
Duran. It's a big deal. Paul McCartney. We can go on and on.
They've had a lot of Bond songs.
It's really special that the theme for the first movie was the James Bond theme from John Barry. And, like, I don't know why. It kind of struck me this time because you're used to hearing, like, these, like, power or these ballads, you know, and like, a vocalist. And exactly. And to this, it's just, no, it's just down, down, down,
down, down. Can you imagine, like, a world where it's so easy to take that song for granted, like the Star Wars theme or something. Like imagine writing that for the first time. Like it must be so cool to not only write it but be like the director or whatever and be like, hey, so here's the theme I wrote. And like, whoa.
Like, listen, you're like, this is cool.
I would love to be a fly on the wall of like when he showed that theme off for the first time. Everyone
where
just
people
like
in the room just like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Everyone came.
Yeah, the James Bond theme is credited to Monty Norman, who did a lot of the music, like the bango music and all that stuff.
Oh, so it wasn't
or bongo, excuse me.
The bango.
It wasn't the bango. The music guy. Who's the like famous Bond music guy?
John Barry.
John.
So
this
Monty
wasn't
Norman.
John Barry.
Monty Norman did like the general do 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 theme on like bongos, but John Barry was so he's credited with the theme, but really. If you want to get technical here, John Barry is the one who did the song, you know, down with the guitar and the whole like setup and all that. So, in fact, if I'm not mistaken, there was a lot of back and forth for years with John Barry and Monty Norman. John Barry's like, yeah, but I did the one that everyone knows. You did like I think there's like a documentary on it or something where it's one of those things where it's like you hear the bongo version of it and you're like, I guess I could hear it in there.
Yeah,
but
I see where the seed of it came
from. Seed,
from.
Exactly. But John Barry's the one who like took it and made it into a thing. So it's like I feel like it should be one of those things like with Batman. Like for years people were like, well, wait a minute. There was a guy named Bill Finger who looked like he did most of the work, and all the credit goes to Bob Kane. And years and years and years, and finally, when you see a Batman property, it'll say in the credits, Batman created by Bob Kane and Bill Finger. I feel like the Bond theme should be like a similar thing here.
Like, we'll just, you know, we'll shout it out. So yeah, we get real iconic sexy Bond theme. We get the
dancers,
the silhouettes, the colorful graphic sexy ladies dancing, and then the third most sexy theme you can think of, Three Blind Mice. And we melt seamlessly into three blind, or so we think, Jamaican men walking down the street.
Can you imagine, oh man, this is another thing. Like, imagine being the audience for the first time.
You're sexy theme. Ooh, sexy ladies dancing, three blind mice. Okay.
Yeah. Would it have been weird then, too?
Okay.
Like, what is happening?
I imagine, a couple that's, going to see the movie.
It's date
night. The husband's like, Marge, they're making a James Bond movie. I've talked about these books. They're so cool. They're so cool. And then just that scene, and the woman looks over oh, James Bond. Huh?
What are we watching, honey?
Stick with it.
No, it's fine. I bet this will turn into something. And it does, because these men aren't blind at all. We're going to, what is it, a British gentleman's club?
The most British scene of the movie.
Yeah.
God.
I'm sure we'll get into, over the course of this, just the presence of, British colonialism, which this movie very much is about.
That's it. 100 honors and 90 below.
Now sit down, Strangways. I have to give a joke.
Afraid I must leave you for a few minutes. Order round on my chip, will you, Professor?
Right.
Damn it all, must you break off at this time every evening?
Sorry, General. My managing director is a creature of habit. There's a call put through to me every day about this time. Anyway, hurry back before the cards get cold.
20 minutes. And don't try doctoring any hands for me while I'm away.
Hurry back before the cards get cold.
But, we're at, a British gentleman's club on the island, and men are playing cards, and, I have to go take my call. One guy leaves, and when he goes to his car, these three not blind mice shoot him. They kill him, and they put his body in a car that comes by. What? This is Dr. Strangeways? Strongways, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Dr. Strangeways.
Surprisingly violent scene for early 60s.
Yeah, they just straight up murk him.
Yeah, you see blood and everything.
And then his secretary,
yeah.
His secretary, who is, at his office or whatever, is setting up a radio call with, the home office. She's also murdered. And that is what tips off MI6 to something being up.
And then is that when we cut to James? Well, we cut to a casino.
To England. And they're like, oh, something's wrong. And then they're like, we got to get Bond on
this. And it's. As we find out, it's 3 a.m. He's in the casino at 3 a.m.
Just doing it.
And I love this introduction to Bond.
It's so good.
It's got to be
it's definitely the reveal, one of those, the lead up.
It was cool seeing this for the first time, having not seen it before. It's kind of exactly how I would imagine Bond would be introduced. But yeah, you have they're playing cards at this high class casino.
He's playing against a sexy lady.
And something I read again in the Chatterpedia that's interesting is when Sean Connery, maybe this is well-known lore, but when Sean Connery was cast,
not the first choice.
No, but one of the things they did, production-wise, to get him ready for the role, this feels very 60s. They introduced him to the high life, so to speak. So they took him to fancy casinos and restaurants and introduced him to quote classy women of London. So. All that to be said, he feels at home in this.
He does, table. And
that does sound funny, but I guess that's kind of, you could say that's research. I mean, that's kind of all.
It's really stretching. I'm imagining, was it Ken Adams, the production guy, with his $14,500? Maybe you could have spent, you didn't have to spend $50,000 on dinners and fancy hotels with.
I mean,
for
from
research.
From what I understand of Sean Connery, he kind of started out, he was kind of a blue collar kind of guy for a big portion of his life up to that point. Mm-hmm. And one thing to point out here.
He was 31.
Yeah, he was only 31 years old when he started this movie, which is crazy. But yeah, he was only he was kind of a blue collar guy for most of his life. I think he was like a bodybuilder at some point. There's you can find pictures out there of him like bodybuilding Schwarzenegger style. It's wild. He led a life. But that's not
that's maybe, where that some of that sexiness comes from.
Yeah, I think I think where there's like some like intensity. And
that's yes. That, I think that's where brings. The intensity comes from. And it does sound kind of funny. It's like, what's introduced him to the high life? But it's like, he might not have even been exposed to that kind of thing ever. So
I think that's something that it plays in his favor, too, because it's not only that he's like kind of comfortable here. He feels, you know, comfortable and at home in this environment, but that he also has a kind of boredom with it he can kind of raise his eyebrow and be like, who cares?
Yeah, he does like feel... at once comfortable, but also like apart from.
Yeah,
from
which I mean, it works because the man is physically, I would say, very attractive, but most of it is the charisma,
and this
which
is
he
where,
has
like,
in spades.
This casino scene is definitely where, again, to go back to the husband and wife in the theater,
the
I imagine the husband like elbowing like,
and she's like, yeah, all right.
Yes, I will be thinking about him tonight.
All right, Harold, you weren't lying.
I just like to say I will be thinking of him and not you.
Yeah. That's, I think, there's been a lot of discussions or arguments about, like, best Bond and pros and cons and whatever. And not to say that first is the best, but, Connery just, he's got the fucking it factor that's...
I mean, this is definitely something from nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's definitely the attitude. Like, again, and the reveal of him is so great. You don't see him full on. You see bits and pieces of him before the full reveal where he's lighting that cigarette.
Yeah. He's like looking at the cards. He's flirting with the lady across from him, and she introduces herself as last name, first name, last name, and you, and then we get the iconic Bond's James Bond.
their exchange here is so good. She keeps losing. She's like, give me more money, I want to beat this guy. And he's just like kind of wryly lifting up an eyebrow like I admire your courage, you know, and that kind of thing. And there's so much like character building in the scene. You get how confident he is, how cool he is, how calm and collected he is. He's also very horny. Like after he wins, he's like, I gotta go, but here's my card.
But
my number's on the back.
You wanna see me later? So he gets called away for business. We go to, he gets the deets from M's office. It's this very kind of low energy, but like we said, no fanfare for Q. There's just like, here's this gun. We know you like your gun, but
We also get Moneypenny.
We get Moneypenny. I know that is a subject of many decades of discussion and
workplace harassment.
Workplace harassment, gender roles, et cetera, et cetera.
At the very, like, it's bad. Like, Bond should not be doing this. But at the very
least. But they do have a good, fun back and forth.
It's at least it's, like, consensual. This would be, it's
if
cringy.
She was like, no.
It's cringy as is, but I was expecting it to be worse, I guess.
It works, you know, for the time and place in a still kind of, like... Sorry, the boy's got the zoomies. He's running all over the place.
There are a lot of feral cats that roam the wasteland. Today, Ozzy is joining us.
Prince of Darkness.
But yeah, it works on a level of that kind of like, you know, my his gal Friday kind of like. It is a, you know, the energy's there, so it doesn't feel
almost
like the worst thing on earth.
Well, there's a point where, like, the way he like sits on the back of her chair kind of, and like there's a point where like they almost dance. You know, like he takes her hand and they kind of swoon a little bit.
It's something that in Skyfall, even though the reveal that she's Moneypenny comes at like the very end, that's something I appreciate from that movie too. Of like, you know, they're colleagues, but they're flirty. They're kind of like
past. They may or may not have done it.
they'll you know, give each other the eye.
There's a good line
it
in
works.
This where it's like he says something about like, we'll go for dinner or something, and she's like, oh, are you gonna actually do it this time, Bob?
Yeah, you're like, I could, I'm not saying you should hit on the secretaries in your workplace, but it, you know, it's not the worst thing I've
it could
ever
be worse
seen.
And I have a feeling it will get worse.
Oh yes.
In this movie.
Yeah,
we'll get to that. Bond, we'll just say Bond has questionable methods later
sure
on in the movie.
He sure does. Anyway, he's...
I don't think this is in the MI6 book.
He's out. He's out on the mission, going to Jamaica.
And this is where... I feel like this is a cool thing. Like, I don't want to let slide. So he goes to Jamaica after this. And, you know, you take a step back. We've been in the movie like 15 minutes, I think. And we've already had like iconic opening title sequence. Little like questionable three blind mice scene where you're like, I don't know. But then cool, amazing casino, like iconic casino entrance.
People have already been shot.
He's like,
yeah, he's already gotten laid.
He's already, yeah. Oh, also he goes back to his apartment first. The lady from the casino is there. How'd you get in? Oh, well, let's fuck.
Well, she had the key.
And now we're like globetrotting in Jamaica. Beautiful shots. Like this is pretty cool.
This
like, and this is fun.
A movie. And love that. I love that.
Very strong opening to like the movie and the franchise. Like, it really sets up like pretty quickly within the first like 15 minutes, like a lot of what this series is going to be, which is cool. Like,
from the first movie. Yeah, that is something.
It's that's the part where, you know, looking back, I can see where some aspect, I can see the parts of this movie that my younger self would find a little bit more boring. But first bet is just like bam, 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 like cool shit.
Comparing it to even like more modern Bond movies that I like and well enough, I feel like this does it's such a snappier opening and
it
so
is.
Fun. I'm thinking of like No Time to Die, where it's like first 20 minutes of that, we're probably still in like a lake house with Rami Malek with a mask on. Like, what's going on here? Like, but this accomplishes a lot pretty quickly. Cool. Like, I love it. I love it.
So we get to Jamaica.
Before we go into Jamaica, I want to point one thing out here before we move on to Jamaica. Sylvia Tretch.
That's what her name was.
Technically, like, the first Bond girl. And I think her character was supposed to be an ongoing character throughout the series. She
is
was
that the
be,
that is Sylvia Tretch the one at the
from the casino who
the casino.
Shows up at his place?
I just wanted to point her out. Her eyebrow game is on point. Did you notice?
Oh, yeah.
Like, her she had very expressive eyebrows.
And
I wish we were a video show right now. We could cut to the eyebrows.
For the visual of it.
Out there
yeah,
on the
her,
way, so
her in
have
that.
To go on but to the Chattopedia.
In that
for
red
Sylvia
dress.
Trench.
Yeah, the eyebrows are flawless.
If you get the Chattopedia out there, I don't know how far the range is.
I'll be honest. I like Sylvia Trench, and I kind of wish that she does, just spoiler, she does show up in the next movie, but she was originally intended to be an ongoing character. She was going to be, quote unquote, Bond's girlfriend. I kind of wish that they brought her back a little bit, just because I like her character in this. She's fun. She's playful and
likes to gamble. She likes to
loves
fuck.
Loves to gamble. Yeah,
nothing wrong there. I really liked her red dress.
So as soon as Bond gets to Jamaica, he like immediately gets in a car chase. Right, like he's picked
well,
up at the airport.
He figures out, you know, as the smart, you know, detective-y guy he is, that the person claiming to be the car sent for him was not sent by, you know, the people he's trying to see. So he gets in the car and then lets the guy kind of keep going. He notices there's another car tailing him. There's a car chase.
This is one of two car chases, and this one I feel like is not green screened. Like, there's one
this
that
one's real.
Is. Yeah, there's one that's like very obviously green screen, but this one,
well, not green screen.
This
but,
one
you
looks,
know.
Yeah, not green. Rear projection. This one is not, and it looks rad. It's like, again, like I think this is the one where I was like, this is like all on location.
Yeah, because again, it's like you've got the blue water on one side. You've got like the dust being kicked up by the car.
Yeah, it's a
and
great
like,
location for a car chase.
You get
cool.
These close-ups of Bond in the backseat looking back with this. I kept wondering, this is really dumb, but I kept wondering, his hat's going to fly off. I was like, his hat's going to keep it, but Bond.
Bond, your hat. You can't go out without a hat.
That's
it's 1962.
That's government, but that's going to come out of your check.
Maybe, I don't know. I've seen this movie a lot of times, so when you see a movie so many times, you start to look at other details.
Oh, yeah.
But I was thinking, like, that hat's going to fly off. They're going pretty
hat,
fast.
Guy.
Did you watch this before today, Dave, or is this just, like, seared in your brain?
It's It's seared into my brain, but yeah, I mean, I watched it with you guys, but...
Oh, yeah, of course.
I've seen all the Bond movies. I guess I didn't really get into this in this episode, but I've seen all the Bond movies a million times, owned them all. But James Bond is one of those series similar to... I don't know if we've talked about this in the podcast, but Morton Hoof has a love for Pacific Rim. Like, he will buy every version of that movie that comes out on any format. I'm sort of the same way with James Bond. So I've seen these movies many times, and they're just seared into my memory.
I love that for you, Dave. So the car chase, like, you find out that...
He kills or incapacitates the driver.
Well, he finds out, like, chased, and the guy driving the car, like, pulls off, and he's like, I think we lost him. And then James Bond, because he's cool, he's like...
Because he's a badass.
He knows immediately, like... Urine on it too, driver.
Yeah, I
like,
know that you're not a real driver.
How long before your buddies get here? And the driver's like, oh.
And then immediately cyanide pills himself.
This is where Sean Connery's like toughness comes in, because like just his whole up to this point, we've only seen him kind of really be cool and calm and collected, but now we see him, he's all business. And there's a point where the guy starts to like reach for the glove compartment, and I love the way Sean Connery just slaps his hand. He's like, stop that.
Yes.
Now, Mr. Jones, talk fast before your friend doubles back. Who are you working for?
I don't know what you're talking about. I was just sent to meet you at the airport.
But by whom?
By Government House.
I don't think so. Both hands on the wheel, Mr. Jones. I'm a very nervous passenger. Get out. Move! Keep your hands where I can see them.
It's a little bit of an awkward fight, like, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, it's a little Star Trek original.
The way
series.
The guy falls into the dirt, like...
Oh, yeah. Just... Full body roll.
Yes.
Yeah, also on that kind of just note of, like, toughness and kind of like, oh, whoa, this guy, he's got that license to kill for a reason. The next,
yeah.
We cut to, like, him pulling up to the actual, like, embassy or whatever with the dead guy in, like, the passenger seat or the back seat.
That's, like... I'm just imagining like being the staff of the embassy, like Jesus Bond.
Oh,
I think they
God.
Do.
Yeah.
Don't they like have a moment like
and
that?
He's got some snappy line of like.
Sergeant, make sure he doesn't get away.
And you're like, oh my God, that guy's dead.
Well, there's a great moment. The guy like looks, then he does like a double, a triple, a quadruple take. He's like, what? He looks at the guy. He's like, oh my God, this
oh,
guy.
Jesus.
Bond, are you? Did they send a psychopath
That's
here to
a
investigate?
Corpse.
You've been in Jamaica for like an hour and you've already killed him. I mean, he didn't kill him. The guy killed himself.
The guy did cyanide himself.
Cyanide in the cigarette, but.
Cyanide
but
in the
still,
cigarette.
Like, the, just imagine, like, this is like Michael Myers type stuff. Like, Bond taking the body, dumping it in the back seat.
Yeah, posing it. Just take a souvenir, too. God.
Hold
He's
on a second.
A finger.
I just want to collect his ears. I'm building an ear necklace.
He's like, yeah.
God,
we've got some commentary on Vietnam happening.
Oh, my God.
This is horrific.
You're getting an appointment with the MI6 psychologist when you're back.
We do not condone this type of behavior.
I don't think you're fit for duty.
The 6 months in the hospital broke
it
you.
It did bro. Something like, to you.
Yeah, him trying to like get these human trophies through customs. They're like, what the
No, it's fine. I work for the government.
License to kill doesn't go this far.
Here's my license to kill. I believe it covers ear necklaces.
It covers dismemberment. It really doesn't. So after that, Bond, you know, gets some info from inside, and he goes down to the waterways to meet with a boatman who Strongway knew. We meet Quarrel. who is a Jamaican man.
Cool character.
He's a cool guy. We also meet Mr. American CIA Felix. What is it? Oh, is it Leiter or Leiter? I can't remember.
Leiter. Felix Leiter. Wearing right. these 60s Jackie O sunglasses.
Oh my God. His little cat eye sunglasses. Those were cute.
It was definitely a style of the day.
It's such a
is
look.
This, is this where Quirrell, like, they go to the bar?
Yeah, they go to the bar.
I
they try
this.
To, like,
I
ambush
to this
him
bar
in the
so
back.
Bad.
It did look pretty cool.
I love this bar. It shows it in a later scene, too, where there's, like, a party or, like, a band playing. Like, mm-hmm. this bar. Talk about visual tourism. Like, dear God, I just would love to.
I want to go to this just cool, sweaty, you know.
Probably have good tiki drinks.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, CIA is also on the case. So we meet Felix, who's also a, you know, a Bond mainstay.
Probably something we should mention. This becomes like an ongoing trope in the series. Like Bond flies to a location. He's supposed to meet a person, but the person he's meeting like isn't sure who Bond like what Bond look. I guess what
like,
Bond
tries
looks like
to attack
or,
Bond, and you think he's a bad guy, but then it's like
exactly
no, I'm a good guy.
Actually,
it's like one of my favorite little things, and I love the lead up to the scene because like from Felix and Quarles' perspective, they're both like. Hey, this Bond guy got into the car with one of the bad guys. Like, what's going on here? So they're unsure. And, like, when Bond walks up to Quarrel and asks him, like, hey, are you Quarrel? I'm like, no, Captain, I'm not. Or, yeah, whatever. And I love the... He walks off.
He says, like, might be. Something like that.
Your name, Quarrel?
Maybe.
I'm a friend of Commander Strangways.
No, ain't that nice. I like people whose friends are people.
I thought you might be able to tell me what happened to him.
As far as I know, nothing happened. Unless you know different, Captain.
Where did you take him, in your boat?
See that, Captain? That there's the Caribbean. That's where. Fishing.
I'm interested in fishing. I'd like to charter your boat.
I'm sorry, Captain. It's not for hire.
Seems I came to the wrong address.
That's all right, Captain. Now, if you'll excuse me, I got business to attend to.
Yeah, I love Quarrel walks off. He's not giving Bond anything. And, like, he keeps looking off to the side of Bond, like, like, he's not conspicuous at all. He just, like, keeps side-eyeing Bond, like, Again, I wish this was visual. Like, watch the movie if you haven't seen it. Yeah. But he is not conspicuous at all. He is so suspicious looking, just like,
So this is where, after this scene, the movie takes a little bit of a dip for me, where I think it's, like, explaining Dr. No's plot, which I'll be honest, I don't think it matters that much. Get what his, like, scheme was.
Yeah, we get a little more info into, like, why Strongway was killed and what he discovered.
Together, and it's like, okay, Bond, here's what's going on.
And that there's another scientist who's been working, Professor Dent, who's been working for Dr. No in Crab Key, the mysterious island. We see him, you know, go there.
I got from this is, like, there's an evil fortress on an island offshore.
That's all you need. And there's radioactivity or something.
Well, you just touched on something, Mike, that was a problem for me with this movie for a very long time. And that is, what is Dr. No's end game? What is he doing? You know,
Dr. Bro, what do you want?
It's like, okay, so the whole thing, like M talks about it in the beginning of the movie, like, the Americans are sending rockets to orbit the moon or this or that. And it's like, okay, so I guess
something radioactive, $1 million.
Sure.
Well, explosion. That's the thing.
Are you getting money from this somehow?
Exactly. That's the thing. So it's like in the end of the week. So fast forward to the end of the movie. It's like, oh, Dr. No is going to interfere with this next launch. They're going to launch a moon rocket or something. And it's like, okay. But the problem is, well, it's just like, is he just being a nuisance? Like, is he just messing with these rockets? Because you're just, we find out he works for Spectre. And we're like, okay, Spectre is this big evil organization. He goes through the little points or whatever of what Spectre means. But it's like, they're not demanding a ransom. Like, it would make more sense if they were demanding some sort of ransom to not mess with the rocket.
Yeah, if they were contacting, like, the U.S. government to be like, we'll do this if you don't do
but
this.
But no, they're just being dicks, essentially. Like, we're just going to mess with your rockets.
Evil.
It's like, what are they gaining?
What is that? Oh, it's like, a panel from like a Spider-Man comic from more recent years, and it's like him talking to some scientist who's like, you have, like, you're a millionaire, you could like be cured, a brilliant scientist, you could be curing cancer. And the guy's like, I don't want to cure cancer, I want to turn people into dinosaurs. It's like, Dr. No doesn't care about like using his knowledge of radiation to like help the world. He wants to fucking blow up rockets.
He could make like some like baller nuclear power plant or something.
He just wants to blow shit up.
Spectre doesn't even take credit for it. You know what I mean? It's like, what kind of evil organization does it go,
organization of bad boys who are annoying.
It's like they're the you know, they're like an anonymous donor, you know, like, we don't want to take credit. It's like, hey, look, you know, we're evil, but we don't want to take credit. We just like being evil.
For the love of the game. Look, we know we have our Spectre, and it's named for all of our really cool interests and blah blah blah, but like we just do it because we love it, you know.
That is one flaw of this movie, where it's just like you're not exactly sure what the villain's plan is, what he's trying to achieve. It's just, other than from what we can gather, it's being an asshole.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, I am okay with that, because it's not like anything in James Bond makes sense anyway.
Exactly. Yeah.
We get that kind of middle point. You know, they try to kill Bond with a tarantula. I kept my eyes closed the entire time. Michael kept on saying, no, it's gone now. The spider's gone now. And I'm like, I know you're fucking lying, but there's still a spider on screen.
It's funny you mentioned being afraid of spiders. So is Sean Connery, to the point where they're like, he almost didn't do the scene.
I would be there, like, right there with you, Sean.
His condition on doing the scene, like the filmmaker's like, all right, here's what we'll do. We'll put a plate glass between you and the spider. So in that scene when the spider is walking up his arm, you could probably tell because it's a very bad looking effect. But the spider isn't actually on him.
Sean Connery is
basically pressed up against glass. The spider's on the other side, and that's why it looks all weird.
Well, like I said,
I didn't notice it. I was too busy telling Jackie that it's gone now and she can look.
You were too busy tormenting Jackie.
I would be right there with you, Sean.
Even in the beautiful 4K restoration, which I don't know if we mentioned, we saw this in 4K.
Oh, it did look very good.
It looks great. This looks good.
I really wanted to go to that bar in Jamaica.
Again, yeah, I kind of wanted to go in HD, but now that I'm seeing in 4K,
And kind of, as we said, in this way that, you know, stopped really existing in movies in the 21st century in many ways, of like, not only is it on location, but like you can see like the sweat on everyone's skin, and everyone's, and it's good and it works, and it's like, yeah, of course you're gonna be sweaty, and of course it looks good because you're a movie star too, and it just is like, feels real, feels like these were humans.
Well,
you can smell it. You're like, it probably smells fucking bad.
You mentioned all the real stuff. Let's take a moment and talk about the opposite, the fake looking stuff.
Yay!
Specifically that car chase. The rear projection car chase.
Yeah.
One of the worst looking car chases I've ever seen. It's made even more funny because Sean Connery is really, he's trying. He's like, like his face. He's like making the motion with the stick shift.
I have never driven a car that doesn't have power steering. And I know like cars back in the day didn't have power steering, and you would have to do a lot of like moving the wheel to stuff. But like, to me, this just is like the really like parody where he's like flailing the wheel wildly, and
he's
it's,
like,
as it's going like straight.
Well, I mentioned this earlier. Like, this has got to be one of those things where I'm like, I'm trying to imagine what an audience in 1962 is thinking watching this happen. It's like,
I bet it looked bad. Like, I bet they were.
It had to look bad then, too.
But they did. Yeah, but it's also like their standards weren't so high.
True.
So.
They didn't have as much like context for like seeing those types of scenes.
Sure.
Parody,
like
probably.
Done. And
yeah.
And
there was no Mad Max Fury Road in 1962.
Sure.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's that I think was kind of the expectation for most film or TV. If like, if you're in a car, obviously we assume you're in front of a rear projection. Because some of those from back in the day look just so busted.
Yeah, it might be like the way that like we look at some CG from like the 2020s, where it's like It's obviously CG, but like, what are you gonna do? Like,
that's a movie. It's fine.
Well,
like,
it's
have it be real.
I'm more forgiving of the scenes where we see Sean Connery head on, but there's a moment when he drives under like a construction equipment, and it's like, it is the worst looking thing I've ever seen. Like, you just see his head from the back, and like, you just see him go under the crane or whatever that is, and it looks so fake. And again, mind you, like, this doesn't ruin the movie for me. I realize that this is a movie set in the 60s. It was made in the 60s. There were certain technical limitations, but even still, it's just like, you take a, it causes you pause. You're like,
this does have a great payoff though.
Yes.
Where the car swerves to like, isn't that what happened? The car swerves to avoid the construction equipment. It goes off the cliff. And I'm like, I'm thinking in my head, like, oh, please explode. And it just does.
Like, for no reason.
Such a good trope where
it
doesn't
that.
Appear like it would have any reason to explode.
Well, I guess the car just felt, no, it's exploding.
Bursts into flames.
How did it happen?
I think they were on their way to a funeral.
Well, and that was, and the funny thing is, like, I noticed that the explosion began inside, like, the cab of the car. Like, not the engine or anything like that, where you think, if it's going to explode,
the
it's going to
be the
engine.
Radio exploded.
Yeah, exactly. Like, were they carrying dynamite in their pockets? Like,
hey, we knew we shouldn't have done that.
Safety features in 60s cars weren't what they...
Yeah, they barely had seatbelts. So Bond shows up to Dent's secretary's place we met earlier, and they had a kind of flirty thing. She's very surprised to see him there because she's in on the trying to kill him part.
Who was this woman at this point?
She was...
She's Professor Dent's secretary.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And she comes out
and
in
Professor
a...
Dent, I don't think we mentioned this part, but we know he's like...
He's
one of the big lackeys. Yeah. Like, we have a good scene where we kind of meet Dr. No. He goes to Crab Key Island, and Dr. No is basically just like, so why is, and he just so is like talking to him through an intercom, and he's just like, why is Bond still alive, mister? And he's like, he's like, well, if he's not dead by tomorrow, you're gonna be dead.
Mm-hmm.
Sit down. Why have you disobeyed my strictest rule and come in daylight?
I had to. Bond came to see me this morning.
Yes, I know. I gave orders that he should be killed. Why is he still alive?
Our attempts failed.
Your attempts failed. I do not like failure. You are not going to fail me again, Professor.
No. I came to warn you.
Warn me?
Tell you. Bond has discovered those rock samples of Strangways came from Crab Key. He's not a fool. He's sure to come out here.
I hope not. If he does, I shall hold you responsible. I make myself clear.
Yes, quite clear.
That scene was actually our first introduction to Dr. No. And I thought this was interesting. Like, he is very Blofeld-esque in this scene. We don't see him. We just hear his disembodied voice. And this guy's voice, what's his name? Joseph Wiseman. We talked about common collective with Bond. Dr. No is like a good foil. Like, that's a scary voice, man. Mm-hmm. Like, you just hear it like echoing through this room.
It's a weird room too. It's just like a big room where there's just a small like wooden chair that he like sits on in the corner.
It's intimidating.
It's just this giant empty room, and like, and this kind of gets into like the production design that I like, you know, doing a lot with a little. Like, I love minimalist design like this in movies. Like, it looks so cool, and in this instance it's really creepy, and the only thing in this room is a chair, and then 10 feet away from that is like this table with a spider in a cage. It's like, that is so cool.
Oh yeah, and then he's the one who gets the spider and puts it there. So back to the sexy car chase.
Sexy car chase. We get to the sexy secretary's house. She comes out in a quote unquote towel, which is a fully tailored dress with a zipper
and heels.
And heels.
I'm like, who gets out of the shower and puts on heels?
She's wearing full
women
makeup.
In a movie in the 60s.
Yeah, full makeup, lipstick, everything. She's surprised to see him there. He remarks on that. Then she gets on the phone and is like, I'll distract him. You got to come kill him. So then he, despite knowing that she's in on it, fucks her. Again, we're getting into the less well-aged sexual politics.
It's okay when they're evil.
It's okay to fuck a woman who has been ordered to fuck you.
Well, there's her
boss. They're both trying to get one over on each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what's funny about the scene,
it's not good.
I'm sure this will be a point that we'll talk about frequently, especially in the Connery era. But the male chauvinism here, but like, and you know, and just the forceful way he acts with women. But like, there's a moment when she has the towel under her neck or something. He kind of grabs it, pulls it towards her, and kisses her. She's like, "Hey," and he's like, "Oh, I'm sorry. What does he say?"
Oh yeah, it's like, "I thought I was invited here for the view."
Yeah.
Oh, like, there's a weird moment where like it's like her not her main towel that's covering her, but like
she had like a smaller towel that
it cuts away, but before it does he's like
he brings it
to his
why did he have to smell it?
Yeah, it's the dark side of that, you know, very compelling you know, Connery charisma kind of thing where you're like, I forgot about this part of it. So yeah, they have sex, which is, you know, it's fine, fuck each other, but then...
There's an interesting... I want to point something out here. There's an interesting cutaway that they do. They go into it, and then it cuts to, like, a slowly revolving ceiling fan for a second as a transition, and then it cuts to them, like, you know, like, yeah, they had some hot, steamy sex in this room. And then it cuts to them, and this... this scene, as we're talking about, like, the questionable methods of Bond and, like, the unfortunate, like, when you're thinking, like... Oh, these are some of the less flattering qualities of Bond. Like, this scene could have gone one way in this moment. He's like, "I'm hungry." And I'm like, "Oh, God, is he going to say, like, cook me some dinner?
Get to the kitchen, like, bitch." That.
And I'm just in this moment, I'm like, "Oh, God, how's this going to go?" And she's like, and he goes, he says, "Let's go out to eat." I'm like, "Oh, thank God."
Because she is trying to keep him there so someone can come kill him. And he's trying to leave.
Yeah, she's like, "Why don't we stay in? I'll cook." And this is the point where I'm like, where there was a brief moment where I'm like, "Oh, good, he doesn't say something terrible. Like, why don't you cook for me?" She goes, "I'll cook," and I was like, "Oh, good, he wants to go out." And then she says, "I'll cook," and that's when he goes and he takes it in the wrong direction. Where suddenly I'm like, "Oh, great, okay." He goes,
"I'm hungry. Let's go out and eat."
"I'll make you a Chinese dinner here."
"No, I'm feeling Italian and musical. Let's go to the Blue Mountain Grill."
"I'd rather stay here. It's more fun. Alone?"
"Yes, but I don't want you getting dishpan hands."
You know, when that happens to women and it's just like, ugh.
"Because clearly I'll you would go. Be doing the dishes and I would be having a cigarette on the couch."
A couple watching the movie in the 60s, I imagine the wife glaring at the husband.
She looks over.
"You piece of shit."
That's, I mean, this is...
This is what you've been reading, huh?
This is the time when,
This
you know,
is what you've been reading.
Don Draper is still writing ads for, like, the softest touch you can give your man. Where... gloves for doing the dishes. That kind of thing. But then we get another kind of gross moment where, although I really like the visual of this shot where it's like her at her kind of dressing table. She's like doing her makeup, painting her nails. And then in the mirror next to her, we see Bond, the reflection of Bond in bed. And he's just kind of like all sexy and rumpled, even though, again,
just all sexy.
The dialogue, not great, but
all sweaty.
The cinematography, I'm like, this is a pretty sexy shot.
It's a well-shot movie.
And then they go over to bed. They're still arguing. He like grabs her bodily and she's like, "No, my nail polish." And he's like, "I don't care." And then I guess they fuck again, even though she's saying no. So that's cool. Anyway, then
she evil girls always give consent even though they don't share it.
Oh, God. Yes, he even gets a quippy line about the nail polish when he, like, he puts her in the car to, like, be arrested. And he's like, watch out for her nail polish. Sorry, her nail polish.
She actually, it's like, okay, yeah, she's evil. She's in on it. But she gets a good moment in where she spits on his face.
Oh, yeah, she spits in his face. Yeah. I do like that.
And I'm
that.
Like, yeah.
Good for you, girl.
The only person to do that, I think. I don't think Bond's ever been spit on after that.
I'm sure
remember.
More women have spit in
Bond's
face. Oh, well,
off screen, I'm sure there has been.
Yeah. But so then back to the, you know, the plot of it. He gets in, it's nighttime, he gets in a boat with Felix and Quirrell.
Did we say he ordered the taxi that was MI6 that showed up?
Oh, that's right,
like,
yes.
We're
to
taking
arrest
you
her.
Into custody, we're going to...
And he kills Dr. Dent here in
oh, yeah,
one of the coolest
is,
scenes in the movie.
That this scene is, yeah. Where he's setting himself up with his solitaire, he's going to stake
this
out
is
the...
is a great, like, little scene. It's like, I feel like it takes like a minute of just him, like... kind of getting himself all comfortable, puts on the...
Yeah, he puts the pillow under the bed to
the
make it look like
the new hit record
theirs.
That it seems like just dropped in this world underneath the mango tree. Like,
everyone's favorite
it.
Song.
The only on song anybody's listening to.
No, I think it, like, just dropped, and everyone's, like, this is the banger of the summer
like,
right
yeah,
now.
Love it. It's Hot Girl Summer. yeah, gets the drop on Dent.
And we mentioned...
It's a cool
being...
scene where... Oh, go ahead, Dave.
Well, I was going to say, we mentioned him being an ice-cold killer. Like, shoots this guy twice, once in the back, while he's already on the ground, conceivably dead. He's just like, one more for good measure.
Just one
there's
for
a,
good
there's
measure.
There's a really good... that I love the way that this whole scene is played. It's one of my favorite in the movie, where he's... So he walks... The guy he's going to kill, Dent, walks in, and he's like... has the gun on him right away, you know, and he's like, sit down. And almost immediately, he kind of like... just sets the gun down in his lap and starts like pulls out a cigarette and starts smoking. Like he just like knows like we're not gonna do anything. Yeah. And the guy's like trying to fish his gun like while
yeah
while
he like
Bond's
dropped on
looking.
A rug.
But Bond is like
Bond knows that,
like you've already wasted all your shots. Like
you've used your
you're
six.
Dead. You're dead, buddy.
Which is and if you're not aware, this scene was actually originally going to be censored because like the ratings board was like, you can't have him shoot him in the back like that. No way.
Well, you know what? Bond
shot first. That's the defining thing
of
the character, though. Yeah, it's Bond shot first.
Sorry that the morality doesn't line up with whatever fucking thing
Listen,
you want,
Bond,
but...
You can take a woman to bed who's saying no, but you can't shoot an evil
oh,
man in the back who just tried to kill you.
You can't pull a struggling woman down onto the bed, but...
You must face him honorably face-to-face
sportsmanlike,
in a duel-like
you know?
Setting.
And that was exactly the mindset.
And we have to show that the bad guy is bad, which is why he's being killed, and James Bond is good, which is why he's allowed to kill him. Nah, fuck off. This guy's got a license to kill. He's a bit of a dirtbag. So yeah. After that, he goes into a sneaky little boat with Quirrell to sneak into Crab Key.
And this is where, like, the movie just becomes, like, Crab Key.
Yeah. This is also where we meet Miss Honey Rider. Even though Trench was technically the first Bond girl, the Bond girl. And
she didn't
the first disposable Bond girl.
She had a cool opening, but it's not as iconic as coming out of the beach and, like, are coming out of the ocean with the bikini and the shells and all.
And
that.
it's 1962, so a
she's
bikini.
She's singing underneath the mango. Tree.
She's singing the hit song. No, but
pretty
a
risque
bikini
for the time.
This in this time, this is not too far removed from like even in like like European countries. Like if you were showing that much skin, like they could legally come up to you and be like, "Ma'am, we're writing you a ticket." Well,
I would say though, like this is a British movie. Like sure. I think that some of the showing skin in a movie was like less risque than it would have been in an American.
Well, even just the concept of a bikini as like a piece of clothing to wear in America, at least, is still and you know in Europe and everything, it's still very new. And to think of showing that much skin is like, whoa, baby.
There's a lot of butt you see in this
scene.
I was surprised
for
1962.
It's a chic little, you know, she's got her belt with her diving knife. Like,
yeah.
It's cool. She's got her fully applied makeup and hair as she dives.
Unfortunately, not her voice. She forgot to bring her voice her Ursula Andrews, and along with I think almost every other woman in this movie, was dubbed.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah.
Which is interesting. This is an ongoing trend with the early era of Bond. They would dub a lot of the women in the movie.
Why?
Because a woman needs to have a sexy voice.
Well, I think with Ursula Andrews, if I'm not mistaken, had sort of a deeper sounding voice. And some of the actresses that they cast in these movies, like, English was not their first language.
Sure, yeah.
So that was probably the primary reason for dubbing a lot of these people. But yeah. I think with Ursula Andrews' case, she could speak English. She just had, like, a deeper sounding voice. And
which is because sexy. Exactly.
But because it's 1962, they're like, no, that's not feminine
she
enough.
She needs to have a nice little high-pitched voice. For some reason I had remembered, I was probably just, I'm probably just thinking of like 10 different Bond movies, but I had thought that Honey Rider ends up like double crossing him and ends up being like kind of a plant herself, which is not the case. She's just
what was Honey Rider doing there?
She's just diving for shells.
Why was she on Crabtree
which
Island?
She sells in Miami for $50.
You're not listening. Exactly. That thing's worth $50 in Miami.
They're worth $50.
In 62?
American.
In 1962, $50 is a lot.
But that's why when we're watching it, I was like, she's obviously like a honey trap, right? That's even in the name of honey, because why would she be on this fucking evil man lair island?
Yeah,
no, this
like is her just name where should the almost best... be like honey pot.
It's literally, yeah, honey pot. but no, she's just some gal who gets wrapped up in it all.
Well, she says that she suspects Dr. No killed her father while he was diving for stuff.
So, she does know that Crab Key Island is like nefarious, but she's like, these shells though.
And this is when we get the flame.
I gotta get my shells.
Hey, don't bother with those now.
Oh, don't bother.
Are they valuable?
This one is worth $50 in Miami. 50. You promise you won't tell anyone?
I promise.
The flame tank shows up here,
oh, yeah, the
right?
dragon.
The dragon.
We also get poor Quarrel's untimely death.
Oh, man, yeah, roasted alive. That's...
Roasted alive by...
I mean, it's a cool death.
It is
gotta go.
Cool, but it's pretty unceremonious. Honey keeps talking about, like, everyone knows there's a dragon on this island. And Quarrel's like, yeah, no, I heard there's a dragon. That's real. And good old, white man, James Bond, is like, both of you are stupid. It's not that. And it's not that. It's just a really tricked out car, real Mad Max style.
Very Mad Max car.
which is, again, at the end of the day, Dr. No, why do you have this? You want people to think there's a dragon on this island?
It seems like it's just... You
You're just
put
doing
up
this
a
for
sign
fun.
That said, trespassers will be shot. That would be a good enough deterrent, I would think.
Yeah.
But no, I'm going to get a tank and then
I'm
paint some a mouth on it.
Paint a mouth, set it up to breathe fire.
Pretty cool.
Well, no, that's it cool, but it's like, you just did this because it's cool.
I felt like a Morton Huff would have appreciated this move.
I mean, that is what his car looks like. But, yeah, they get, yeah, Quarles is killed, Honey and Bond are captured, they're covered in radiation.
Brought to the evil fortress, and now they're like, yeah, it's like, oh, looks like you guys are all covered in radiation.
Well, they were in the swamp, so they're fully radiated, we gotta shower them off.
Okay, so the sequel to this movie is just James Bond has cancer, like, your body's full of cancer.
James Bond dies of every cancer
there
is.
Yeah, because if I recall, they say that his amount of contamination is higher than Honey's.
It is, even after being decontaminated. Like, they're both off the charts when they get to the fortress, which is probably hours of just like...
Yeah.
Like, I saw the Chernobyl series. I know what happens. It's not pretty.
It's not. It's
And so
bad.
They, like, they spray, like, foam, like, basically a fire extinguisher on them. And they're like, oh, it's still too high.
Still too high. Then they put them through a conveyor belt shower, which they say it's like, turn it up to the heat. They're both just kind of casually like, oh, you
yeah,
know,
it's really
wipe
funny
it
when they're going
neck.
Through. They're like, oh, nice. Like,
they're both very casual.
It looks pretty pleasant, actually.
It does.
You can see the steam coming off, and they're probably cold.
And again, they're both hot. They're both just incredibly attractive.
And yeah, they're hers is like, oh, it's gone. But he's like still got some. They're like, stick your hands in the special machine. It's under your fingernails. And
it's under your fingernails. The radiation.
Him off.
Yeah, then they're taken to
Nice hotel suite.
Nice hotel suite by two, you know, pleasant ladies who are like, oh, and of course, if you need anything, just you let us know. And
this is cool. All I love these all clothes. This, like...
We only got your sizes last night, so let us know if you need anything.
Well, I thought this was interesting because this begins a long-running trope in the Bond series of the Bond villain, pleasantly.
Wants to show you a good time.
I want to show you a good time before I kill you, you know? But what's fun about
even
this...
Even in No Time to Die, there's like...
He's like, come on, let's be cordial. You know, but what I like about this the beginning of this trope is that when we see it here for the first time in Dr. No, it's played for weirdness. Mm-hmm. Because Connery and Honey Rider are looking at each other like, what the hell's
going
to happen?
What the fuck is going on?
You know, he's like, yeah, can we get you anything? Oh, a ticket to London?
And they're like, oh, you. You know?
And just like, they're all looking around. And like, there's so many moments, little moments when like Bond and Honey Rider just glance at each other like, what the fuck? You know, and there's a really great moment where I don't think this ever happens in a Bond movie after this. But Bond says that he is scared. That blew me away. I was like, whoa. Yeah.
Where he's like, this is a weird fucking situation.
This is weird.
And it only gets weirder because then they, you know, there's a whole meal laid out for them. They start drinking some coffee, and of course it's drugged. Which is like,
the way
already have them here. Why are you drugging them?
There's a moment where she like holds her stomach, and for a brief second, I'm like, are they going to get like explosive diarrhea?
Yeah, Dr. No just wanted you to shit yourself. It's a power play thing.
There's only one bathroom.
Oh, God, move, honey. Move. It's that scene from Bridesmaids where they both have to shit and puke.
That's so good.
And it's fully shown.
I'm imagining like the scene where Dr. No, because the next scene is Dr. No coming in and like checking up on him.
He's like,
he walks in and just like, oh, covered. God. Leaves.
The whole room is disgusting. No, instead we get, as we go into the Bond series, I'm sure I will become very annoying pointing all this out, but we also get the scene where Dr. No, he still has not been fully revealed, but we get his creepy little hands, and he comes in to James Bond is drugged in his own bed and like strokes his face, and it's a very classic Hollywood
claspy hands.
It's a classic Hollywood queer-coded villain moment of like, isn't it even creepier that he's kind of gay seeming? Long history of that in movies. Even though once, and it kind of continues when we meet him full on and we get his backstory and everything, he's still kind of, you know, he's a little bit too precise. Like he's a little bit fey. Yeah, exactly. As opposed to our, you know, lantern jawed, hairy chested.
He's not
lead.
Checking up on Honey Rider.
Exactly. And, that's something that, you know, is another part of the Bond legacy.
You know, I'll be honest, I never picked up on that as a kid watching these movies. That is totally right, though. I think as a kid watching it, I always thought he was like considering killing him with like his claw hand, like choking him or something. I think that's originally how I took that scene as a kid.
Well, it's intimidating, but it is also you are in this unconscious state and I'm standing over you so powerfully.
And I don't think he's at all killing him because at this point
it's
revealed
he respects
him. He wants him like on his side.
Yeah.
Which is I think part of why he's treating him so well is maybe he's like knocking out aside, like I don't want you to escape, but I want to convert you.
But
to,
I could use a man like you. Wink.
I mean, and, I could really use a man like you.
It's just, you know, part of the many colored thread, the woven tapestry of Bond and the movies and in general. But not the Bond.
You know, I'll be honest. I don't think that ever occurred to me. But you are absolutely right. That is what that scene is.
I was going to say is that, you know, not that Bond is the only one who's ever done this. Check out any Disney movie ever for your queer villains. But finally, Honey and Bond are dressed for dinner with Dr. No. And Bond in the like the Mandarin cut style jacket is really funny to me. He just looks so just like white guy on vacation. But that's the other kind of side of Dr. No, where it's like, we'll give you a little bit of queer coded villainy. You know what else we're gonna give you is a half German, half Chinese, all Red Scare, all xenophobia bad guy.
Oh yeah, there's like so many people in this base who are like pretending to be Chinese
who are definitely not. Oh,
yeah. Definitely not. Yeah, we mentioned like the secretary earlier. Definitely not Chinese.
But yeah, there's big yikes. So yeah. They're taken to, as we said, the tricked out lair for only £14,000. But it's, you know,
here's my aquarium.
It is creepy because
that fireplace looked cool.
The fireplace, which is like, there's like all this like kind of wood and stone elements, which are a kind of like warm design thing, but because there's no daylight and the only, you know, simulation of it is a giant aquarium, like it's fucking creepy. Mm-hmm. And it's effective in that. But it is also, as we said, I mean, from a 21st century eye in 4K, you can kind of spot a little bit of a few kayfabe elements, which is fine. Get the reveal.
He refuses to join when offered. Like, Dr. No is like, so here's my plan. I'm going to like blow up the thing.
This is my whole deal. I'm Chinese and German. I have these prosthetic hands due to radiation stuff.
I'm like a radioactivity genius, but no one didn't he basically like, no one wanted to work with me, like the West was afraid of me, the East was afraid of me,
he's one of those evil scary mixed guys, you know, it's
just like an office pariah.
Yeah,
everyone says I'm bad vibes,
so I went on an internet forum to voice my
I found a great community,
and then I found these people one thing led to another.
Special executive counterintelligence terrorism revenge explosion.
It's a bit of a mouthful, I know.
It's a seamless acronym.
Yeah. Everyone loves it.
With your disregard for human life, you must be working for the East.
East, West, just points of the compass, each as stupid as the other. I'm a member of Spectre.
Spectre?
Spectre. Special Executive for Counterintelligence, Terrorism, Revenge, Extortion. The four great cornerstones of power, headed by the greatest brains in the world.
Correction. Criminal brains.
The successful criminal brain is always superior. It has to be.
Now, there's some line about how, like, he was, you know, in with the Chinese organized crime, but you know how they don't trust outsiders, and then the West didn't want him, so of course he turned to evil.
They didn't trust me because clearly I'm not Chinese.
because I'm fully European.
They're like, you're not Chinese at all.
You're clearly playing a racist caricature.
We don't like that, bro.
This is very offensive to us. You need to go.
So yeah, that's what I'm part of Spectre, and we're gonna blow shit up. You in? And Bond's like, no. Also, get Honey out of here, because she shouldn't be here at all.
And so they shouldn't. And then they like beat James Bond. Like that was like a kind of harsh scene where they just like, it kind of pans away, but he's like just being like punched.
Yeah, he's like, being like, yeah, beaten.
Yeah, soften him up. That was a good villain line.
Yeah, sure.
And he's placed in a jail cell. And there's a cool scene. Like, I like the scene where he breaks out of the jail. Like, he finds...
Yeah, he has to...
A very conspicuous air vent. Like, it's a little silly when you think about it, but it's a cool... It's just, like, shot well. Like, the shots of him, like, sneaking through the air vents and stuff.
It's also
and
longer than I remembered, too. This goes on for a bit.
When he's, in the tube, and then it gets, like, flushed with water, and he has to...
Well, there's the whole scene where the vents are too hot, so he... So he rips his shirt off, which is great. Great action movie.
Yeah,
move.
Yeah, yeah. Always good.
And he's like using that to climb on, and the water rushes through, and he's holding on, and you see like it's so hot, so the water's like steaming off. Like all great set design.
He's constantly like ooh ah.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was Ken Adams' work or who is responsible for that, but. That was cool. Like
this has got to be like some of the earliest action hero going into the air vents scene in a movie that
and one
ever
of the better
been,
ones.
Right?
Like most of them just stop at going through the vents, but this has like it's hot, and then you got the water. Like there's lots of little touches that make this kind of stand out.
And then we go into, and this is the part that I do remember totally checking out, watching this as a younger person. The first time I saw it, when he gets to the, you know, the science operation room, and
which is so just, 60s.
It's so 60s. It's like
this part's pretty quick. I feel like we're almost at the end of the movie.
At this point, I just remember in the past being like, I don't care. Is it over? I was like on my phone, I'm sure. But yeah, Bond like steals a rubber suit from one of the workers, and he's just kind of walking around overhearing the
pretending to be like one of the
employees.
He
takes some files. He pretends to read.
I love what I can.
Honestly, I can understand being bored by this scene a first time round, because it's like, again, we don't really know what Dr. No's plan is. It's like, okay, yeah, he's going to interfere to it, but to what end? You know,
to
just to be an asshole?
It's just a big quiet room where they're like, all right, starter's on.
Yeah, they go through the whole thing of like, all right.
And he's like, go for it.
So-and-so, what are
the
meetings over there?
The thing that saved this for me was the dynamic of like everyone thinking like Bond is a worker there. And like, there's a
he
moment.
He gets yelled at a couple
times.
Yeah,
there's a moment where Dr. No's like, I forget the guy's name.
Where's
probably
Chang?
Some racist. Yeah. But he's just like, what are you doing over there? Like, sorry,
just
boss.
Looking at my files.
Well, what's funny about that moment? Yeah, like, this is the big moment when they're going to mess with the rocket, or whatever. And I guess this Chang guy, I don't know if he went out to take a leak or what, but like, there's a you see this guy go out
maybe
and take
there
his helmet off.
Maybe there was probably some machines off out in another room he had to calibrate.
Maybe.
There was a shift change, five minutes before.
It's my union lunch break.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it felt like to me. Because theoretically, like, this guy is leaving his post, like, 2 minutes before he's supposed to do the big thing. So I'm like, is he going on a bathroom break?
You know,
what's
you
this guy
that,
doing?
You forget the strength of unions, but back in the 60s, even evil...
They had to, yeah.
Even evil henchmen had their own union.
Union strong. It's the classic, like, stormtrooper thing of like, okay, I guess that guy's just walking around and, you know, no one will hear you knock him out and take his clothes. It's fine. Don't worry about
whatever.
It.
Whatever.
I guess Chang also didn't notice the air vent hanging, like, off on, like, on an angle, and as he walked
Look,
by.
Look, he needed that cigarette break. He's been having a really stressful
day. Hey, he wasn't
I
on
didn't
the clock.
Get my 15-minute
mandated-
break.
He's not paid to pay attention to the air vents during those 15 minutes.
It's like, I'm having my 15, dude.
This is someone else's problem.
Exactly.
Poor guy. Rest in peace, Chang.
Energy stabilizers. Energy steady at 0.8 megawatts.
This work of tracking stations are plugged into the Mercury Control Center here at Cape Canaveral.
Fuel elements.
Let's see, we're just checking down our gantry.
Fuel elements. Where's Chang?
The emergency tower was put in.
Chang, what are you doing there? Get on the gantry.
Although the alarm has not been given, the time for the alarm was given the count.
But Bond foils the plan by just turning a dial up and punching a dude who tries to stop him, basically. and then it's too late to stop him. And he's ruined and the base is going to explode, and he throws Dr. No into the radiation water or some shit. And
of course.
As you do,
we get a cool visual. You see his little clasp hands try to get onto, like, clap,
yeah,
clap,
very,
clap.
Reminded me of, like, the Terminator 2 or something with the hand reaching out.
But because he's got his creepy little villain hands, you can't get a...
can't get a grip.
A grip, But, you know, Bond escapes, everyone's evacuating, things are exploding, but he's got to find Honey, who for some fucking reason has been chained up pantsless, because she was wearing pants with her outfit in the earlier scene.
The dungeon.
Yeah. He didn't just send her back to her hotel room? Like, what? But he rescues her, they jump on a dinghy or something, which is out of fuel, even though they do escape the crab key. But lucky we got...
They're like, let's just, like, make out until
I don't know, the
yeah. rescued.
Yeah, there's like, well, our boat doesn't have any fuel. Should we just fuck in the middle of the ocean? What does Bond say? He's like, well, we can swim. Or...
I mean, you know, they're off the shore. You know, they're probably not far from shore. MI6 knows what's going on. They probably saw
there
the big,
gigantic
explosion
happening.
So, like, they're probably going to be rescued soon.
Yeah, and Felix comes and tells him, but then Bond's like, I've got other business.
Actually,
and
I do want to fuck first.
Gets the, you know, cuts the rope. But this gets back to something I mentioned in the beginning I wanted to talk about. So we mentioned the James Bond theme underneath the mango tree, you know. But we didn't mention the score of the movie. The rest of the music.
Was
which,
there music other than
dun, dun,
underneath
dun,
the
yes,
tree
yes,
and
there was.
The bomb
scene. You forget because it seems like music from 20 years prior, but there is music in the movie. I want to say it's John Barry, but I'm not sure. But it feels like I mentioned before, old music.
Yeah.
It feels like music from something from like the 40s or 50s. Like when Felix shows up at the end of the boat, the music suddenly is like da 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 da.
Ahoy, Mr. Bond. Ahoy, Mr. Bond.
Well, well, what's the matter? Do you need help?
I'm quite sure you don't.
Well, now that you're here, you'd better give us a tow.
Cross your line.
Like a weird little throwback in there.
Yeah,
it's interesting because the Bond theme is so, it just feels so modern and iconic, and you know the mango tree is just kind of fun, but like
and then you get this music which feels like something that came out 20 years old prior, you know.
I don't know if this is true at all. I would love if it's true, if they're like, you know, we got to the end of it, we've got a couple good themes, ooh, we did run out of money though, do we have anything from the archives we can just kind of pull from here and there?
It does feel like that, like just
Which is
it just feels so out of place, like with, because like, yeah, that's a good way to put it. Like the rest of the music in the movie, the Bond theme, the dance music, it feels modern for the time. But all this other stuff feels like something from like a 40s film. It just doesn't fit in this movie. And this is the only time that this happens. Like all the other Bond movies have like a composer for that movie that is doing the music and is era appropriate. Mm-hmm. This is the only time you get this weird out of place, like 40s, 50s sounding music.
Which I as we've said, I think, you know, it being the first movie and it being a kind of like, well, the books are really popular, I hope this, you know, does it, but let's try. It feels like, yeah, we gotta, you know, finish this thing up with chewing gum and whatever,
yeah,
and we'll make it work. We will. And then, you know, it comes out and they're like, okay, yeah, we made it work. But
it's interesting. For all the things that they establish about the Bond formula right off the bat with this movie, there are a few things that they don't quite master until the next second and third movie.
Yeah,
and
know,
one of them,
gotta...
I think, is like the score of the movie in general.
Yeah, because I think everything after this feels much more cohesive music.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
And, yeah, so we end with, I do kind of like the boat shows up, and they're like, ahoy, Mr. Bond, and he's like, well, hey there, do you guys need help?
Yeah.
And Felix is like, clearly you don't.
And again, it's just so awkward with the
it's just funny. And
you see
Honey
do this pose, like, like,
oh, yeah, she stands up with like her hip cocked.
Yeah,
I like the titles too. When the end, it's like,
oh yeah,
or something like.
And it's the boat in the middle, which he's let go of the tether, so we can keep making out with Honey.
Oh, well, I thought you were talking about the very end with the credits, where like it this is the only time this happens, where it cuts. You see the gun barrel again, and it's all red. And then credits are kind of flowing up.
Oh, that's cool too.
It.
It's all,
oh yeah,
all good.
That was pretty cool.
All good, all cool. You know what, James Bond? Pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
For all that, I will again become very annoying bringing up the problematic aspects.
No,
like,
I mean, I think we all will. And it's
just
like,
just there.
It's like unavoidable.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a gross shit stain on what is otherwise
a beautiful,
like, such
couch,
such a fun, enjoyable.
You're like, look at this gorgeous piece of mid-century modern furniture. Do ignore the stains here and there.
Someone did take
smell,
a big, like, sexist and racist dump.
You know, they still smell kind of bad, but
I think,
you,
yeah,
know,
the,
it is part of the tapestry.
The peak of that, I think, will happen in Goldfinger.
I've heard about this.
Is that with Pussy Galore?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
How did
that'll
they
be
name her that? How did they get away with
it's,
that?
It's, I think I said in the No Time to Die episode, like, I find it, you know, it's so ridiculous that I do find it really funny when they just go full on for the a lot of vagina,
yeah,
you know,
the names are The names could be fun. It could be so fun. But
I mean, Honey Rider, even's like when she shows up and she's like, "Oh, me." I'm like, "Yeah, Dick Rider, what's up?" They just call her Richard M. Rider. I was named after my father. What? Call me Dick.
What how does this rank for you, Dave, as you're the expert on these? You know, not exactly, but just sort of like, you know, generally speaking, where does Dr. No fit for you in the Bond pantheon?
You know, years back, I actually did rank the Bond movies, all 24 of them at the time. I want to say that here's the thing with Bond. I like all the Bond movies, even the not so great ones. Mm-hmm. There are qualities I can find that I enjoy in all of them. And it's kind of hard to, I'm a little biased because I'm such a Bond fan. So like I said, even the bad ones I enjoy, but, this is one I've reevaluated, over the years. Cause as a kid, starting with movies like Goldfinger and some of the Moore movies that were a lot more way over the top and had crazy action set pieces and all that. This was a big, as a kid, step back at the time for me because I'm like, well, there's no car. There's no gadgets. Like, this is boring.
His car doesn't even shoot anybody.
Exactly. But watching it now as an adult, it's, you know, and through my 20s, like, I've kind of grown to appreciate this movie for what it does. I like that it's so different from the rest of the Bond movies and that it's just kind of a straight-up detective story. And he has to use more his wits and his cleverness. Like, again, we mentioned taking out a piece of hair and, like, you know, putting it, you know, to see if anyone's coming to his room. Like, those are the qualities I really like. And as much as I love the craziness that we'll get with the next, as the movies go on, like, there are times when I'm just like, it'd be kind of cool if, like, and I think we brought this up on No Time to Die, it'd be kind of cool if we got, like, another, like, a 60s set Bond movie, you know, like a period piece where the gadgets are there, but he also has to kind of rely more on his wits and his cunning and all that. That would be kind of neat. But as far as where I'd rank this, probably fairly high. I mean, I think it's there are some problems, as we said, like, what the hell is Dr. No even trying to do? What's his end game? But, like, it's a very fun movie, very, like you said, snappy, and needless to say, I would definitely recommend it.
Yeah, I agree. As I said, I can see the parts where my younger self was, like, writing it off or just, like, checked out, not interested. And it is slow in parts, but that is something that I really appreciate about it at this point. Even at the parts where I'm like, maybe this isn't the most exciting, like, I like it for what it is. And, I mean, what it does right, we've said a million times, is actually iconic.
It's 109 minutes, which was about an hour.
Hour 30 and change.
It's like about an hour 49.
I bet you could trim it to just a clean hundo.
Sure.
And it would be a little bit.
A clean hundo.
Just a little bit of fat.
But, I mean, yeah, it's got that fucking charisma that you need for Bond. And I can
charisma
see.
You crave.
That charisma you crave. I can see why they kept making these movies.
Yeah, it was. I liked it more than I thought I would. I don't think I have anything new to say. I think what'll stick with me, or what has stuck with me at least so far, the two big takeaways are the Sean Connery's Bond is fun.
Sean Connery hot.
And the like the sense of being in Jamaica in this movie was really cool.
And if you can watch these movies in 4K, do it. They look great.
It looks damn good. Yeah, you can smell the salt coming off the screen. Yeah. Recommend.
I hope we did a good job with our assignment.
You did. I think we can close the case on Dr. No. I have a new assignment for you. It is From Russia with Love.
Oh, already From Russia with Love. Wow.
We will be back next time with the Apocalypse Video Bondcast in From Russia with Love. Well, unlike the Bond movies, we haven't quite worked out the kinks. We'll get this a little bit more smooth running as the further we go.
Know.
We'll get a better sign off for this podcast.
We're all noobs. It's fine. Underneath the mango tree.
Jump up, yeah, jump up. yeah, jump up,
it's,
jump up.
It's gotta be only three blind mice.
Have you any idea what they're going to do with us?
No idea. No door handles or windows either.
It's a prison, then.
Mink lined with first-class service. What's the matter?
I don't feel so good.